Well, that you might.
Jesus. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, the best damn wrestling podcast in the universe. I'm Dan the Man, I'm here with Dougie the Thuggy.
Yo, I'm ready to go after a nice turkey sandwich.
There you go, I had ham. And E-Nasty here, Eric, how we doing?
What's up? How are you guys?
We're good, man.
You have a good week?
I had a great week.
It was a weird week because of having a day off in the middle of it.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good week, and we're here to talk some more Macho. Ooh yeah. We did 11 through 5 last time, or 10 through 5.
Yeah.
There's only 10 in the top 10 list. And then we're going to do 4-1.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of list left. This is part 2 of our top 10 matches and moments for Mr. Macho Man. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
It definitely is, because there's a lot we still have to get through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to get right into it?
Yeah. I do want to preface, though, by saying that, like, we're basically, I think a lot of this 4-1 is more than likely his WWF run. Like, there's nothing against the WCW run, but, like, after 98, he was pretty much, like,
he was done.
I mean, even with the reinvigoration of the character and the addition of, like,
I like the heel dickhead stuff, though, when he was being, I mean, I didn't like that he slapped Tori Wilson or something like that. Didn't he slap somebody? Who did he slap?
I think they accused him of slapping George, the Gorgeous George.
They didn't accuse him. He did it on camera. It was like a part of the story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was George. It might have been. They accused him of hitting George, but he actually did hit Tori.
So, he hit somebody backstage. He fucking slapped the shit out of some chick.
Yeah.
But,
But see, to me, like, that character was kind of, because that was basically, it was him kind of reinventing himself.
Yeah.
And showing that, you know, he's still kind of a ladies' man.
Yeah.
And, like, the theme song was kind of cool. You know, the, what up, Mach? And, that character was kind
of. He had some good stuff in WCW. He had some really good moments, even a part of the NWO. But WWF is definitely his time. Like we said, he should have been the number one guy in some spots. So his best work is definitely in the WWF. He's got good stuff in his later career, like a lot of guys that went there.
Yeah.
They had some good later career stuff, but does it really capture them in their prime? No, not really. Only a few guys got way better with age, DDP being one of them, one of Macho's best rivals.
Right. It was, like, the reinvigoration of the Macho Man character with the whole, like, the heel and the Team Madness and all that, which, by the way, he had three gorgeous women with him.
He was just going too far.
Yeah.
It was back when it was hard to get invested because someone was winning the world title every week.
Yeah.
You know, that was when it was getting really bad.
Yeah. And, by the way, he actually met Gorgeous George, and this is no lie, Gorgeous George, Stephanie Bellers, was actually a stripper that Macho Man met at she was dancing at this place called the Dollhouse in Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
And they met, and then they just kind of started dating, and then they wanted him back on TV, so he's like, can I bring her with me? And
that's how she got the job?
Yeah.
Gorgeous George, wasn't he like an old-time wrestler?
Yes, but this is a different Gorgeous George.
Oh, okay.
So,
I was a little confused there.
Yeah, and I saw, by the way, like,
when you were talking about strip clubs and stuff, I was like, wait a minute, wasn't Gorgeous George like the...
Yeah, he was at the drag 60s, show.
60s, 70s, something like that?
Yeah. Well, no, the original Gorgeous George goes all the way back to the 30s.
Oh, really?
I think.
Yeah, but he wasn't as hot.
No. No, this Gorgeous George, her real name was Stephanie Bellers, and she actually dated Macho Man for a while. And she's also part of, like, this controversial story that went around, like, 2000, 2001 at some country concert. She got into a... Road Warrior Hawk was there with his wife. And Macho Man was there with Gorgeous George. And George got into it with Hawk's wife. And Hawk stepped in and threatened to hit George. So Macho Man stepped in and said, you're touching, you know, my woman or whatever. And they got into it.
Yeah. But yeah, his early stuff's way better.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get into it.
I think that's the point we're trying to make.
I'm going to go through the whole list to start. At number 10, we have versus Sting at Spring Stampede 98 for the world title. Number 9, we have Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the 89 King of the Ring. Number 3, we have the Las Vegas Sudden Death Match at Halloween Havoc 97 with DDP.
No, that's number 8.
Whatever. The next one is WrestleMania 7 match with Ultimate Warrior.
Okay.
The Macho Man sit-in in 97.
Right,
January 20th.
Yeah.
And Saturday night's main event, February 8th, 92 with Jake Roberts.
Okay.
That's 10 through 5. Number 4 is the Mega Powers Explosion.
Oh, and this was a live special. So...
the ultimate heel turn, some would say.
So, back in, everybody remembers, I'm sure, and we actually covered it on the show, the very first live edition of the main event, when they did it on a Friday and Friday, February the 5th, 1988. Like I said, we covered it on the show. And because that was that drew such a big rating, NBC is just like, all right, do it once a year now. Once a year, we'll do it around this time,
mm-hmm.
and just pick two matches. Don't do three, because they actually ran out of time, and they couldn't do the World Tag Title match on that first one. So Strikeforce and the Hart Foundation screwed. So they're like, just pick two matches, and we'll roll with it. We can get enough. We're giving you an hour in prime time. Which prime time, a Friday night time slot from 8 to 9,
big deal back then.
Big deal back then. The thing, and, you know, they were running up against, if you look at, like, what they're running up against, ABC had already started TGIF.
Oh.
So you're...
They had all those family sitcoms.
Right. So you're on a Friday night, you're running up against...
Family Matters and shit like that, right?
I don't know if Family Matters had started yet, but pretty much. But I think you're running up against, like, Full House and remember Perfect Strangers?
Oh, yeah.
All right. That was another big one that was on Friday nights. I feel like we should be saving that for a different show, though. But anyway, so you get my point.
Yeah.
All right. So you're running up against that. But so when you're running up against something like that, you have to have big marquee matches. The biggest feud at the time was Hulk Hogan and Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
Both guys had partners. So it's like, okay, we're going to do the Twin Towers and the Mega Powers. By the way, the other match on that card was the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase versus Hercules, which actually was another big feud that was selling out house shows at the time. Good for Hercules. Anyway, so... they're going to do this match, and they've been teasing since Survivor Series that Savage was going to blow up on Hogan because Hogan was getting a little too touchy with Ms. Elizabeth, including at the Survivor Series when Elizabeth or when Hogan picked up Elizabeth for a big hug in front of Savage. Savage looked at him and said, "What the fuck is going on here?" Like, he had that look on his face like, why are your hands on my woman? And then, like, they continued to have problems. But so they were going to have this big tag match. In the middle of the match, Akeem took Savage and threw him on top of Elizabeth. Hogan picked Elizabeth up and carried her to the back.
Yeah.
Savage saw that Savage was getting pissed. So Savage is getting beat up by two guys who, by the way, are both over 400 pounds. And that was after dinner. So, and by the way, Twin Towers actually, the whole act was slick. A very underrated act, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
Very underrated heel act. I mean, they were, I liked both of them.
Yeah.
I liked that whole deal. And slick as well.
But Keem was never going to go too far, though.
No. But I'll tell you.
Because it was kind of a weird.
It was a weird gimmick, but the way they set it up, like that vignette where he became Akeem.
Yeah, but he's not African, right?
No. And but, like, that whole vignette where they're on the streets of Chicago and they're setting up, like, he becomes Akeem.
This fat and, white dude, the African dream.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a dig at Dusty?
You know what?
The American dream.
I think it was. But I don't think, I think it was, and I think, like, One Man Gang, George Gray, I think he kind of felt uncomfortable, not uncomfortable with it. He tried to make it work. I think Slick had no clue what the hell was going on.
Yeah, he was like, fuck it.
But, like, that whole setup when you're in the middle of, like, this dark neighborhood in Chicago where gang lives.
Yeah.
And you have Mean Gene out there in a tuxedo. Fucking 11 o'clock at night or whatever time it was, but it was dark. And you had Slick out there. And Slick goes, "Let me tell you something, brother." And Gene goes, "What's up, cousin?" And I was just like, what the? Why are they getting Gene to talk straight? But to me, that was like, that was fucking, that was gold back then. Like, you good. Look at it now, like I look at it now, you know how, like, I kind of, you know, almost creamed over the whole Sting segment where Sting tricked Rick Rude and
yeah,
all right. But so, like, you know, I enjoyed that, you know, and I enjoyed this, and you might watch that whole Akeem transformation thing.
No, I like that.
And look at it and be like, this is the dumbest fucking thing.
I don't think it's dumb. It's just racially weird.
Yeah.
Because of, yeah.
Nowadays it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even back then, it's kind of still a little spotty, right? I mean, just this fat. I mean, I don't know where he's from, but it's not Africa. And
he grew up, well, the character, I'm pretty sure he grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
All right. What's actually funny is that after he retired from wrestling, he actually became a corrections officer in Cobb County, Georgia, you know, like his former tag team partner was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bossman.
Yeah.
When did he retire?
Bossman was a legit corrections officer. And then Gang, when he retired, he actually got a job working as a corrections officer. Not, I don't think at the same prison, but basically in the same area, you know, outside of Atlanta. Gang, Eric, to answer your question, Gang, well, I'm getting to that. Gang officially retired, I believe, in like, because he still did like spot shows here and there, but I think he officially retired in like 2002.
Yeah, he's another
one
here that's just underrated as fuck.
Yeah,
and another one of those big, I like I said, fat and like, yeah, he was, but it's like they were still athletes, man, and they could still move and they could still go, and Gang could fucking go with the best.
Although he had a faux pas.
on this episode of Main Event.
Yeah.
So the faux pas being, and I'll get back to the whole heel turn in a second. He goes to she just take us off the air.
No, we're still on. Right. She just minimized the tag.
Eric, can you still hear us?
The screen went blank.
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, good. All right. So there was a part where, like, I think Savage had already slapped Hogan in the face and left. And Gang has Hogan draped across the second rope and gets ready to go do his thing where he goes up against the ropes, gets a full head of steam, and then kind of does, like, the body, you know, drops all the weight on, like, the back of Hogan's neck.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
That's yeah.
All right. Gang goes to run across the ropes. His fat ass tripped and he slipped in between the ropes.
That's funny as fuck.
Live television.
That's still a good spot, though, for a heel.
It's a good spot. Well, the thing is that, like, it's not because Hogan moved or anything like that. It was the ropes he was supposed to run against. And he slipped in between.
Oh, yeah, that's stupid.
Like it was a faux pas in front of, by the way, about 20 million people that were watching this at the time. It's still on Botchamania.
You
like,
see this big bastard spill.
Yeah, like 450 pounds. But he recovered pretty quick. Well, he got back in the ring right away, and he tagged Boss Man in. He's like,
he's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You hit him. I'm done with this shit.
Yeah. So, but again, two very underrated guys. I don't think, I mean, Boss Man, I think, does get his just.
Yeah.
His just due.
He does.
Okay. Gang not
does.
So much.
Gang's up there. Gang, Bigelow, and Vader are like the three big men that get lumped into the King Kong Bundy, like lazy type thing when they weren't. They were underrated, agile, awesome big men characters.
Yeah.
That all deserve Hall of Fame. I don't know. I know Bigelow's in, isn't he?
No, Vader got in.
Okay.
Bigelow hasn't been in yet. Gang, I would love to see go in.
It's just crazy because WWE and you got the Hogans and the Jacked Out, they really emphasize that era, and they kind of forget that the guys that made Hogan look so good were the fucking big boss men's and the big guys.
Right.
You know? And it's just, they only talk about Andre and shit. They don't talk about all these other guys that are really good.
Right. So the spot comes, so Hogan takes Elizabeth to the back, and Elizabeth said, go back out there and help Randy. Because Hogan's just saying, Randy didn't mean it. And, like, he's just, like he's trying to make it sound like he's just treating Elizabeth like a little sister. But the way, like, he was all over her, it's like one of those. Remember when
Kurt, you don't grab your little sister's ass like that.
Yeah. Remember when Kurt Angle took Stephanie to the back during the one episode of SmackDown, and then he, like, laid the lip lock on her?
Yes.
Okay. It's almost like, except for Hogan didn't kiss Elizabeth. But you almost kind of get, like, those vibes.
And that's the thing, and that's why it's hard not to paint Hogan as a dick behind the scenes, too. And we did that for, like, 30 minutes last episode, so we're not going to get into that this episode.
And that's why we're doing a part two.
Yeah. But he fucking – it's one of those – like, to me, this is probably – I said the ultimate heel turn earlier, but honestly, it probably is the best heel turn, maybe the most iconic. It's right up there with some of the best heel turns of all time. But it's one of those also where it's like, Macho's pretty justified. You know? Like, yeah, he might be flipping out and jealous
if
and stuff.
If you
but
show
Hogan,
this to a new fan.
Yeah, they'll be like, yeah, I'd fucking punch him too.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. Like, he's getting a little too fucking touchy. Like, you don't really blame him. That's why it's kind of hard to be like, because it is a great heel turn. And what it led to was good. I liked the match. I liked everything about that feud. And I like the blow up, but
right. So Hogan goes back out there. Savage shakes Hogan's hand and slaps him in the face, and then goes to the back to talk to Elizabeth. Hogan then deals with Akeem and Boss Man, gets beat up, makes a comeback, and also helped that Akeem's fat ass slipped through the ropes. Makes a comeback, disqualification win for the Mega Powers. Right. Hogan goes back there to talk to Savage. Like, what is your deal? He goes, you have lust in your eyes for Elizabeth, yeah.
That was good.
Now it did.
It's not going to happen again. All right. That was
good. Nice job,
thank you, Eric. But, like, so he's just like, if you want to come at me. And
no,
now you can't.
Yeah, now I can't.
That first one, sorry, that first one was just too good not to comment.
You can't give him praise.
Yeah. But then he's like, you got lust in your eyes for Elizabeth. You want to come at me man to man and go after the world? And all that bullshit. And then Hogan's just like, talk some sense into him, Liz. I mean, I don't know what's going on. And then you just see Savage just come at him with the belt.
Yeah.
On the training room floor. You stupid bitch. Don't kick us off the air.
She jumped.
Now you know what I deal with every day when I work from home.
You have my sympathies. So anyway, so then he just starts putting knots in on Hogan's head, and Elizabeth tries to interfere, and then he grabs Elizabeth and he hurls her across the room.
Who hurls her?
Savage. Like he pulled her, and he just—it's almost like he just fucking shot putted her, like backwards, like across the room, and you just hear her scream. And then Brutus Beefcake comes in, and he's just like, get away from me. You're crazy, man. You're crazy.
Brutus Sponge Cake.
Yeah. Because this is around the start of, okay, we're going to put Hogan and Beefcake together.
And we're going, oh, Hulk Hogan.
Exactly.
sorry.
I mean, it's as good a description as any, right? So, but, and then... You know, you get that promo again where he goes, oh, you got lust in your eyes for Elizabeth, yeah. And that's the only line I could fucking
I was just saying, your lust is fucking awesome.
Yeah. Wait till we get to the Flair, to the promo after the match with Flair. I can probably do that. But the whole thing, the build-up, like you said, the build-up, the match. WrestleMania 5, by the way, was actually one of the highest grossing WrestleManias I think up until 14.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think WrestleMania 14, because they had Tyson, like it broke. That's what broke the box office record. But WrestleMania 5 up to that time, at that point, again, for like the next 9 years, that was, you know, the highest grossing because people wanted to see the mega powers explode.
Yeah, and it was the perfect – it was almost the perfect storyline. It's the perfect heel turn. It's an iconic feud, and it's an iconic breakup and everything about it because you kind of believed that these two were boys. It's not like one of those angles where you put a guys together for a few weeks and they break up, and it's like, oh, what the fuck? You actually thought that these two hang out and shit.
It was a year buildup.
Yeah, so when it finally came to an end, and you never thought that Macho would do it. So when he did it, it's like, damn. And having a girl in between, it was just, it's relatable. It's a great storyline in all senses of the world, or the word. Because exactly. it was pretty original for the time, you know, and it's very real. Shit like that happens all the time, and it was good. All right, next up, we have Ric Flair, WrestleMania 8, and you were just talking about this.
Okay. So, again, this is another thing. By the way, some of Randy's best feuds involved, like, you know, Elizabeth somehow being involved.
This one's completely different, though, and in a great way, because it's just Ric Flair turning up his character, which is already his character, to a 10.
Yeah.
And you have the best version of two characters, which is this loving, this Romeo and Juliet homecoming king and queen couple, and this fucking dude who's just a really good guy and he treats his lady great, and that's like the mom and dad of the WWF. And then you have this fucking asshole from a different company who's known for getting mad fucking, we'll say, clapping cheeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's known for getting mad vash. So he's out here killing it. He slings through it. He's
never heard that word before, have you?
No.
He's the man that takes your girl to Space Mountain. That's what he does. And it's what he's known for, and that's what he brags about. Ric Flair.
Oh, okay.
Ric Flair, and that's was his whole character is being a sleaze and being a fucking, get mad chicks. And they did it a little bit back in NWA with certain people, and like Precious and shit, right? Was it Precious?
Right, yeah, it was Precious when, like, and then
Garvin in the hotel room with JJ.
Oh, yeah, that was still, I love that scene.
So, and then you have these two awesome characters, and now you have a perfect foil. You have a perfect with Miss Elizabeth, who is this just this gentle, innocent, like Bambi type creature. You know, like a just a, like a deer, like a doe. Like she's just a sweet woman, and fucking Ric Flair's trying to clap her, and he's trying to fucking, and he's using her to get to Randy's head. You don't know if he wants the belt or if he genuinely just wants to clap cheeks. It's just a great story.
So the whole deal, WrestleMania 8 was supposed to be Flair and Hogan. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, about right after Saturday night's main event, they decided, okay, we're going to switch it up.
Well, yeah, because they were doing the towns. They didn't draw well, and they said, fuck it.
So
that's
when,
the reality.
When they, yeah, that's the reality. So they switch it. And then afterwards, Perfect and Bobby Heenan start saying, oh, we got a surprise for Macho Man Randy Savage. Because Mr. Perfect was, you know, and Bobby Heenan were part of that Ric Flair package. And Flair was the executive consultant. Bobby Heenan was the financial advisor. Both played their characters very well. Like, Mr. Perfect was absolutely hateable back then.
Oh, yeah.
Especially because, like, he had that Lloyd's of London policy on him to where he could hit you, but you can't hit him back.
Yeah.
And to me, that made you, like, the ultimate heel to where you could get away with such shit. Now, if I were around back then and I got told, oh, you can't hit me because I have a policy, first thing I'd do is I'd hit you.
Yeah.
And be like, I fuck you out of your policy, motherfucker. Mm.
Yeah.
We'll
get sued.
Well. Tomato.
I could see you do that, though.
Yeah.
I could, too.
Me, too.
I
see you in the courtroom. Like,
damn, motherfucker, son of a bitch. If he's going to hit me, I'm going to hit him. Fuck you, judge. Then I get taken off in handcuffs.
But
then Eric yells across the room, I'll see you at a conjugal visit.
It was just, it should have been the main event. It's one of those matches.
Yeah.
Hogan and Sid had no business in the main event compared to this. It was a perfect storyline. You had two genuine wrestlers that could wrestle and fucking put on a great match. You had a good story behind it. And the right guy won because Macho had to win.
Yeah.
And it had to win for it to work. You're coming off the Royal Rumble.
Yeah,
he
had to go over.
Ric Flair winning the world title. He's fucking white hot again. And it was just perfect. It just worked. It was one of the best. If we live in a world where Macho and Steamboat doesn't happen, then this is Macho Man's best WrestleMania match.
Exactly. And as somebody said, I think it was in Style of Monster Sounds Off, somebody said one time, that before Shawn Michaels started having WrestleMania, like classic WrestleMania matches, you could almost consider Randy Savage as Mr. WrestleMania.
He's up there.
Now, you kind of forget that he at WrestleMania 2, he worked with George the Animal Steel. So I'm pretty sure that part of the brain was basically, that part of the brain that created that mental picture was killed by alcohol. So, but you could technically consider, because, again, the WrestleMania 3 was Steamboat. WrestleMania 4, even though a lot of those were short, he did have some good ones. Like, the match with DiBiase was decent. The match against Greg Valentine, although Greg Valentine really wasn't really in the mood to sell. Fucking useless Dutch woman. Like, that one was pretty good. And then the match with Warrior. And then, obviously, this one. But, see, this one here was good. And, like, even the build-up when they were talking about how, you know, she was mine before she was yours. And they published the pictures in the WWF magazine.
Yeah.
And Randy had even said that he wanted to punch the people, punch the publishers of the magazine in the face. And then you had one of the editors of the magazine come on and say, how dare Macho Man, in a British accent, so you know they're pussies, how dare Macho Man Randy Savage, and I can't do British, question our integrity. Our magazine is full of integrity. It's like, yeah, publish fake news. Shut the fuck up.
you're the Hollywood Inquirer for fucking WWF at the time. Don't get me wrong. Love reading it. Got a lot of issues upstairs. But legitimacy, no. So then Randy, and then they were doing the interviews in the house, and you know, in the houses, like Gene Okerlund went to Randy's house 2 weeks in a row, which I actually think was a lie. I think he just spent the night there and did like two interviews that just aired over like 2 weeks. But he interviewed Elizabeth, and Elizabeth said those pictures that Flair has that says it's him and I, he cut Randy's picture out and put himself in.
Yeah.
Which was detailed over the next couple issues in the magazine. But, like, those are mine and Randy's personal pictures. I don't know where Flair got them. But, you know, it's not true. And then you see Mean Gene interviewing Randy Savage about it. He's like, what did you say about the allegations? And all you hear Randy say is, not true, not true, not true. And, like, the veins are popping out of his head. Like, you would almost, and you're almost thinking, like, all right, Gene, you might want to leave. Like, because Randy's about ready to get up and hit somebody. And Gene Okerlund was still halfway decent at the time, so I didn't want him to get hit.
Yeah.
Not till he got to WCW.
I just feel like Rick was the perfect foil for that relationship.
He was. And then you get to the match, and the match was, and by the way, you already had one of the classic Intercontinental title matches.
Yeah.
Okay. So now these two have to follow that.
It was light work for them, though.
It was. And then there was the one spot in the match where Randy comes off and Flair hits his head on the guardrail and then Flair blades.
Ugh.
By the way, no blading policy in the company at that time.
He didn't give a shit. That's Ric Flair.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, he thought, because Brett bladed earlier in the night, but Brett and Roddy, when they were questioned about it, Roddy made it sound like, you know, he really, that it was hard way because of the way he was punching Brett,
yeah.
And Brett hid the blade.
Yeah.
So you couldn't actually tell that he was blading himself.
Yeah.
Flair's stupid ass. The camera caught him going like this. Even though, like, he was face down, but you could tell what he's doing.
Yeah.
Flair didn't hide it. Okay? So Flair got busted and got fined, I think it was $10,000 or whatever it was.
Jesus.
Got a hefty fine. Bret Hart didn't get fined, so Flair was butthurt about that. It's like, well, hide it better. Like, we get it. You're adding blood to the match, which, in this kind of a feud, I understand.
Yeah.
I don't think Roddy and Bret needed the blood. Because it was two baby faces.
Yeah.
Okay?
But no one's going to tell Roddy Piper. Just like Ric Flair.
Well, Piper was done after that night,
yeah,
anyway.
No one's going to tell Roddy what he can't do.
Yeah. Well, Brett was the one that bled, and Brett, like, really bladed himself. Like, there was blood all down his face. Flair, like, it was at the top of his head, and that's it. But I don't think the Intercontinental match needed the blood. This did.
Yeah.
Because it just added to it.
It was a blood feud.
Yeah. And then Perfect kept getting involved, and Randy got trapped in the figure four, and then you see Elizabeth coming down, and Dave Hebner and Shane McMahon and all these other agents trying to get involved, trying to hold her back, and then Flair has Savage trapped in the figure four, and then you see Perfect holding Flair's hands to try to add to that leverage. And then finally, Earl Hebner in the ring, referee. Earl takes three steps back and then gives the kick that knocks Perfect on his ass on the ground. And Earl got a standing ovation for doing that. By the way, there was about 68,000 people in the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis to watch this. So for a WrestleMania that a lot of people say, you know, not necessarily the greatest. It drew a house.
Yeah.
So I don't want to fucking hear it.
Exactly.
It's one of my all-time favorite WrestleManias. But the fact that, like, something finally happened to Perfect and Earl did what he did, and it's just like everybody else on the outside is trying to fucking rush Elizabeth back, and Elizabeth's not hearing it. She's just like, fuck you people. I'm staying out here. My husband is, fighting for the title. And then Flair grabs Savage's leg. Savage blocks the punch, hits him, rolls him up, grabs the tights. You can see Flair's bare ass. And, one, two, three, that's it. And then Flair grabs Elizabeth and kisses her, and then she starts, slapping the shit out of him. Savage jumps on him, perfect, and his Lloyd's of London ass goes in and just starts, they just start beating up on Savage. The referees are holding Savage down. Nobody's holding Perfect and Flair down, yeah. But they're holding Savage down so Savage can get beat up.
Yeah.
Fucking bastards. The only person trying to hold Savage or trying to hold Flair and Perfect back is Earl Hebner. The only person that had Randy's back during this whole fucking thing in the first place. And Earl's getting thrown around. And then, they get Flair out of the ring, and the officials are finally doing their fucking job. And then Earl stands in the ring because Earl has to help Savage up because during the match they were playing up that Randy's knee had been severely damaged.
Yeah.
And it was perfect, right? It was perfect. Well, it was done by Perfect. But it was it was a perfect story that was being told. And I just get goosebumps just talking about it now, right?
Yeah.
And, they get Randy up and they do the fireworks and he's holding the belt up. And Howard Finkel goes, "Here is your winner. And once again, World Wrestling Federation champion." You get this big ovation and then the promos after. Because Bobby Heenan goes down and joins Flair and Perfect for their post-match interview. And they're just like, "Randy Savage is a cheater." And you got Sean Mooney, who's holding the microphone, going, "Mr. Perfect, you kept interfering." And they're like, "Shut up." And then Randy's promo.
Yeah.
And Mean Gene Okerlund goes, "Randy Savage, you heard them talk about you grabbing the tights." He goes, "Ooh, I don't care. I don't even care." And he goes, "As far as I'm concerned, Ric Flair, I just got a piece of you, yeah." And then he just talks about, and then, goes on and talks a little more. And then Gene wanted to talk to Elizabeth, and he's like, "You know what? No." He's like, "This is yours," and hands her the belt. "This is yours. Take it and go." And then he rips off his shirt. He goes, "And this, Ric Flair, is yours. You can have all of me next time, yeah." He goes, "I don't care if it's in the street, parking lot, doesn't even matter to me, because I'll do anything I can to win. If I didn't prove it tonight, I'll definitely prove it to you next time, yeah." And Mr. Perfect, "I'm not perfect, you're not perfect, nobody's perfect." And he's just like, "I'll get all of you next time, yeah." And I was just like, and that's one of my all-time favorite promos.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Damn, Doug, you've been practicing.
When it comes to that promo, and I think the Piper promo, Royal Rumble match, I can do those. Any other promo, it's just like,
give me a Vladimir Kozlov.
I gotta work on that. But any other promo, most of the '92 Royal Rumble promos, I can probably do.
Yeah.
When they talk about going into the Rumble or whatever. And I did some of them from when I was on the old Rain Man show, and I got made fun of, and that's why I...
Fuck those guys, except for Box.
No, Box Man was cool, and Anthony wasn't really making fun of me. It was that piece of shit producer we had. But, so Eric by far is my favorite producer I've ever had for a podcast.
Aww.
I'll go fuck myself.
Yeah. You're not necessarily a producer.
Part-time.
Right, well, you and Eric tie.
I produce.
Okay. You produce a lot of content, that's for sure. Yeah, so you and Eric tie, I love you both.
It's okay.
Anyway, this match was it was almost like a storybook ending. Elizabeth just ruined it by, divorcing him a month later.
Damn. In real life, right?
Yeah, in real life.
Damn.
All right. You ready for number two?
Yeah.
The World Championship Tournament at WrestleMania 4 when he won.
Okay.
He beat Ted DiBiase.
Beat Ted DiBiase, wrestled four times that night, which was unheard of. And a lot of people say, oh, they didn't need to have the whole tournament that night. You could have had it like the first round somewhere else, which they could have done like a primetime special or something like that.
Yeah.
Or even like a special on primetime.
They made it special.
Like a March to WrestleMania 4 or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm cool with what they did. I enjoyed the tournament.
Me too.
Okay. Some matches on there did not need to happen.
Yeah.
Like we could have done without 90 seconds of Bam Bam Bigelow in one man game.
Yeah.
although, to be honest with you, like if the match would have gone longer, I probably would have liked it. But Bam Bam Bigelow looked like a shrimp compared to the gang. But no, so Randy Savage beats the Natural Butchery, Greg the Hammer Valentine, One Man Gang, and Ted DiBiase to win the world title. Basically, when you know we got to WrestleMania 4, and it's just when we got to WrestleMania 4, everybody thought it was either going to be the winner of the Hogan Andre match from round 2. They thought that that was going to be the world champion.
Yeah.
But the way they had it set up was, at first, the way they had the bracket set up, it was going to be Savage and Rude in the final.
Yeah.
But then they felt like they would tell a better story with DiBiase. Which, I don't know, like, how do you say, do you think that a Savage-Rude final would have been good, too?
Yeah, I think Rude would have been able to do what DiBiase did. And they're both great, so.
But do you think like it would have been like a different, not necessarily a different story as in Rude winning, but.
No, I don't. I think it would have gone probably the same way.
But like, do you think it would have had the heat though that.
Yes. DiBiase. I think Rick Rude was as good of a heel as DiBiase was.
Okay.
To answer your question.
Yeah.
But I'm a Rick Rude guy. I love
Rick Rude. Rick Rude's winning the best.
And I love Ted DiBiase, too. They're both, like, elite, but DiBiase got booked a little more elite than Rude did.
Right.
Rude was a bit more underrated than DiBiase.
Right. So, like, because...
Rude was, like, a perfect, really good wrestling heel.
So, what would have had to have happened, the way they had the bracket set up, Rude would have had to have beaten... He would have had to have beaten Jake, which I think was the original plan, if the brackets would have stayed the same. He would have had to have beaten DiBiase, or not DiBiase, he would have had to have beaten Jake. He would have beaten Morocco in the second round, and he would have gotten the bye because he would have been placed where Andre, or he would have been placed as the Andre DiBiase, or the winner of Andre, or he would have had to have faced the winner of Andre and Hogan.
Yeah.
Okay. Savage would have had to have beaten... And I think the original finish, I think, was Gang wasn't going to go over.
Yeah.
Because Gang and Bigelow were just going to beat each other up. It was going to be a double count out or a double DQ. DiBiase was going to get the bye that way. And but Savage was still going to have to beat Reed, Hammer, DiBiase in a semi, and then Rude in the final. So... It would have been a little different. I mean, the majority of the outcomes would have stayed the same, except for they were still toying with the idea of doing the WrestleMania 3 rematch in the second round with Steamboat and Savage, because that's what everybody was hoping was going to happen.
Yeah.
The issue is that they wanted Savage to face all heels. And also because Ricky had given his notice and said that he was done after WrestleMania 4, Vince said, okay, well, then you're going to lose in the first round. So, yeah. I mean, well, Ricky gave his notice, so there was no reason for him to. You don't go out on top. You go out, when you leave the company, you have to put somebody over.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes.
So.
All right. Number one, drum roll. Our number one Macho Man moment of all time is, of course, WrestleMania 3 against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
A lot of people might say, how is that his best moment when he lost? Savage's momentum just went higher and higher.
It was so good. He looked so good. It was babyface, right?
No, Savage was heel.
He was the king?
No, he wasn't the king yet. He was the Intercontinental Champion.
Okay.
And he had injured Steamboat's trachea.
Okay.
Or trachea or larynx or something. To where, like, they did that angle where the doctors told Ricky, you know, you can't wrestle anymore. You're done. But, you know, Steamboat being the man that he is, he's just like, nah, I'm not done. I'm going to stick around. And George the Animal Steele was in Ricky Steamboat's corner, which really wasn't necessary, but Steele also was kind of part of the finish. So.
Yeah.
I mean, again, they didn't need him.
Yeah, but it was just such a perfect match. It wasn't even about the story. It's just one of the best wrestling matches of all time.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not about winners or losers. It's a masterpiece. It's a piece of art. It's something that Sharon doesn't like wrestling that much. If I put it on right now, by the end of it, she'll be like, that was really good. It's one of those things. You can show it to anybody. It's a good fucking wrestling.
Yeah, I did.
No, it doesn't, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's one of those matches. It's a masterpiece. It's.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it, but I wasn't. Yeah. Kind of like I am now. It's okay, but...
Yeah, you weren't as into it, because basically back then, the only reason why anybody in our house was watching it is because Dad and Baba had it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was never a favorite thing. Just, like, it might not be anybody's favorite thing. If you show them this match, they'll be like, damn, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's just the best wrestling match of all time, if not one of them.
Well, it's one of the best wrestling matches of the 80s.
Yeah, and... It's just two guys that athletically could go to the max. Both guys were fucking great. Both guys could make anybody look good, but also when they're made to look good, can look amazing. Both guys.
Chemistry was amazing.
Just Rick, you know, the correlation's just, it's putting two of the best in-ring workers together and magic happening. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
Chemistry, the ring, psychology, everything was amazing.
Yeah. Because
it still holds up.
Yeah, it does. Because it'll still be, like, if you do, like, a top 10 greatest WrestleMania matches of all time, it's still going to come in at, like, I mean, I would think it would come in at, like, 2 or 3. I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, Shawn Michaels matches are, you know.
Which one? What Shawn Michaels match is better than that? Shawn and Undertaker 1 still isn't better than that. There's two.
Well, I would say, like, if any of Shawn's WrestleMania matches were going to compete with Flair and Steamboat, it would be...
Macho and Steamboat.
Macho and Steamboat, I'm sorry. If it was going to compete with Macho and Steamboat, it would be his match with Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But even
that,
it didn't have the heat that this had. It didn't have a couple different things. Like, it was a great match, but... I don't know, man.
I mean, maybe Jericho at 19?
Maybe Ric Flair for emotional value. Not for in-ring stuff, but because of the story in the moment and the I'm sorry, I love you super kick. And maybe for all that, it might top it. But fucking actual, like, in-ring work, I think this is one of the best ones. This is right there with Eddie and Kurt. So... And I still love it to this day. I would still show it to anybody that wants to, like, learn about wrestling. And I think it's a masterclass. It's just one of those matches.
Oh, no, I 100% agree with you.
It's not the number one match you show people.
Right. Like, if you do, like, if we ever do, like, you know, because Eric had the idea of doing, like, a top 10 matches of, like, certain years.
Yeah.
If we ever did top 10 matches of 1987, this would be number one.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of a match in 1987 that would top this.
It's just like Dave Meltzer, I don't know what he rated this, if he rated this at the time. But if you want to tell me Okada and Omega, any of their matches better than this, you can kiss my ass.
Well,
on the brown spot.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
No, I agree with that too, because
I'm a big Okada fan.
I like him too. I know you don't, and I don't want it to turn into that. But I like him too. It's still not better than this.
Okada and Omega, the funny thing about them is the only gripe I had with them is as good as the match was, it dragged in certain spots for me.
Yeah.
I was good with them going a half hour. They did not need to go like 45, 60 minutes, whatever the fuck it was.
I'm not a fan of 32 finishers either.
Okay. So
how much rain can you make?
Yeah. So that's my only gripe about it.
Motherfucker,
other
had like 32
that,
rainmakers.
Yeah. Other than that, perfect,
yeah.
Perfect match. But
yeah.
You know, cut it at a half hour or whatever. These two guys went 15 minutes playing Steamboat and Savage. That's
yep.
All you needed to do.
Still put on the classic.
Yeah, the long match can be good if done well, and that. But it's just this is right place, right time, right guys. It's just the best.
Yeah,
it's hard, and it had to be number one here. Even though Macho lost, it's his best match he's ever done.
Right. Well, again, he continued to ascend. Now the whole Steamboat thing, you know, they gave him this big WrestleMania moment. He thanks them by taking time off.
Yeah.
Now again, he had every right to take time off. His son was giving birth. Or not.
His wife was giving birth to his son.
That,
yeah.
That might be a valid statement in 2023, but
yeah. No, his wife was giving birth to his first child. Well, actually, no. Like he didn't take the time off until after she had given birth.
Yeah.
Like, because she basically went to him and said, "I need you home. Like, take some time off, you know, so you could spend it with me and the baby." And Vince kind of looked at him like, "Ricky, we just gave you this moment. Like, why?" Because Ricky didn't ask for it until after WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, he's smart.
Because Bonnie's just like, not even after WrestleMania. It's just he went to him one day and said, "I need time off. Ricky, you're the Intercontinental Champion. We just did this moment for you. Well, Bonnie wants me home." And, you know, Vince, of course, you know, not necessarily... Well, actually, no. Vince back then actually gave a damn what other people wanted. So they're just like, all right, fine. You know, we'll undo what we just did. And, you know, Steamboat kind of went down. Huh?
How do you undo what you just did?
By leaving.
No, but how did they write him up? Write that he lost the...
They just he lost the Intercontinental title, the Honky Tonk Man, and then we didn't see him again for like 3 months.
And Honky Tonk Man was champion for like 3 years.
About 14 months. So like they basically like all the buildup that they gave, you know, they built Ricky up, they made him into the champion and all that. They gave him this beautiful moment, and then like in a 3-minute match on television, which was actually in Buffalo, by the way, it got wiped out just like that. And, you know, again, you can't really fault Ricky for wanting to spend time with his family.
No, it's real life.
You can fault his wife for bringing it up.
It's real life. So.
Yeah, it is real life. And I know a lot of people, you know, myself included, you know, a lot of people do criticize Ricky, or not Ricky Steamboat, but Bonnie Steamboat for kind of getting involved in Ricky's business, but... You know, you want your husband home, that's your prerogative, is wanting your husband home. Are you smart to do it? Are you smart to do it, you know, when he's in the middle of this big run and they just, you know, did all this big build-up for him and all that? Probably not, but wrestler-wise are not smart. Look at Deborah McMichael and Karen Angle.
End positive, though, because we're getting out of here.
Yeah. I can't think of positive wrestling lives.
Well, we'll move on from wrestling lives.
Yeah. But, no.
I just don't want it to be even. Fuck Karen Angle. Have a good night, everybody.
Yeah. everybody has fuck Karen Angle. but we'll never get Jeff on the show.
I'd like to still get Kurt, though. I like Kurt a lot.
Kurt will agree with everything you said. But no, like, as far as
Randy's top 10 moments in matches, this would this one being number one definitely should be. Again, he didn't win the match, but he gained as much from it as Ricky did.
Yeah.
Because they realized, they're like, oh, my God, like, we can actually count on this guy to have a good match.
Yeah.
Is that what made his career, do you think?
I think that's what helped.
Probably did.
That's what helped start. That's what helped give them faith in him.
Okay.
He was already on his way, though. The character was, he was doing the promos.
Yeah.
He was already honing in. It was just that next, it was the big moment. It was time for him to shine, and he shined, and it was like, all right.
Was the cream of the crop promo before or after this?
I think it was before.
Okay.
But he was already doing his shit. It was just, this was the biggest spectacle to show everybody, and he really showed them.
Well, and also, too, WrestleMania 2, he was being considered for the title match with Hogan.
Yeah.
King Kong Bundy got jealous of that, went to Vince and said, no, give it to me because I can crap bigger. I crap out bigger pieces than Randy Savage because King Kong Bundy had an issue with Randy Savage because back...
Randy was actually talented.
Well, that and apparently Randy and his dad back when they were running International Championship Wrestling said that Bundy was too fat to be a main eventer.
Well, he wasn't wrong.
No, they weren't wrong, but in Bundy's eyes...
They weren't wrong.
But... No, like, but Randy, yeah, it probably did. Like, he was, like Daniel said, he was technically a made man, but this is what I think started to, you know, put the faith in him that they knew he could work.
Yeah.
And then, like, once he got the title and then the whole, all the Hogan stuff happened, it's like, okay, this is our guy. This is our number one heel. Not DiBiase. It's not Rick Rude. It's not Andre anymore. He's our number one heel.
Yeah.
But then when they needed him to be a babyface, he could be a babyface.
Yeah.
He'd be a babyface.
He could truly go both ways and was great at it.
Yeah.
But that's not what we meant.
But this was a lot of fun, guys. What are we doing next week?
So do we want to try Eric's new idea of coming up with top 10 matches for a specific year?
Yeah.
Okay. Eric, you came up with the idea first. What year do you want to do?
Well, I'll come up with a year and then I'll put in a group no vote.
No, give me a year.
No,
right
just
now.
Give it a year. Don't leave it up to these assholes.
1997.
Okay. We love our fans. All right, 1997 it is. So top 10 matches from 1997.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we love our fans, but it's also just like, if I pick 1985, you know that's what they're going to vote for.
Yeah. But, all right, guys, we'll see everybody next week, and I love you both.
Love you, too.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye, guys. See you tomorrow.
See ya.
Are you ready?
Amen.